What's up, guys? Rick here with your preview for this week's Zurich Classic, and this is a very unique event. It's a team event, so it is not going to be broken down the same way that we normally do, but we'll still look at the golf course. We'll still look at the pairs, the teams that we will get for this week, a little bit of strategy along the way, but there's a lot to goes to luck here, right? And we're going to throw out some of the data, something that I've rarely ever say, and we're going to go a little bit more on feel. So we have a lot to cover. Let's jump right into this. Okay, so first and foremost, this is my website, rickrungood.com. Everything you see from here on out will be from my website. I've got, obviously, the Zurich Classic loaded in for this week, and where it made sense, I put in the teams as one. And some places you can see individuals, some places you can see teams, some places that you can see both. There are also four other fields loaded in for this week. The seniors are playing, the European Tour is back, Korn Ferry Tour is playing, and LIV is playing. All of those fields are loaded in as well if you want to take care of those, and we'll chat more about those on the Wednesday live chat. So this event in particular, team events, the only one we get on the PGA Tour. The first two rounds, they're going to go best ball and then alternate shot. And then the final, and then they're going to make a cut. Then the final two rounds will be best ball and alternate shot. So best ball, meaning whatever, you know, each golfer plays their own ball. Patrick Cantlay plays his own ball. Xander Schauffele plays his own. If Xander makes a three and Cantlay makes a four, they use Xander's three. Alternate shot sounds exactly like it is. One guy tees off, the next guy hits the second shot, next guy hits the third shot. That is the much more difficult format. Breaking par in alternate shot is not easy to do. And when you get to best ball, 59 might be in play every single week. Okay, so two very different styles of scoring. If you've never played this style on a fantasy site, specifically on DraftKings, you cannot pick both partners. So if you choose Patrick Cantlay, you cannot choose Xander Schauffele. And it doesn't matter which one you choose because both of them are going to accumulate the same number of points. It doesn't matter if Xander by himself shoots a 59 and Cantlay shoots an 80. They are a team and they get the same number of points. They will be salaried. Their salary will be exactly the same. So it does not matter who you choose from those teams as long as you have one of them. One of the other things to consider here is there is a lot of luck in play. Okay. So, you know, if Xander and Cantlay each while playing their own ball on Thursday, each make nine birdies, it would stink if they made all of their nine birdies on the same holes. They would love to do, Xander birdies every hole on the front nine, Cantlay birdies every hole on the back nine. That would be called hamming and egging it, right? Ham and egging it. Where there is a little bit of luck, you don't want to make your birdies at the same time. You can find teams that have either complementary skill sets or fill each other's voids, which is, I guess, a weird thing that just came out of my mouth. But for example, complementary players would be Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele. They're both very well-rounded. They both do things very nicely, et cetera, et cetera. Or that's similar skill sets. The complementary players, the guys that kind of fill each other's voids, Tom Hoagie and Maverick McNealy might be a good example of that. You know, Hoagie, a great ball striker, McNealy, an awesome putter. Those teams tend to have more high risk, high reward, because if they can stay on script, if they can have Tom Hoagie hitting the valuable iron shots and then Maverick McNealy gets to putt the birdie opportunities, things can go very, very well. If they get off script, that's where things can go sideways when you have McNealy hitting the second shots, hitting the valuable approaches, Hoagie having to make the putts. That's when things get a little bit off. So a lot of different styles of play that can come into this, but at least now we have discussed what it is going to take structurally. And then here's the golf course. And I'll tell you, so TPC Louisiana, you know, we don't get the same amount of data for team events. This hasn't always been a team event. It was an individual event up until probably 5 or 6 years ago. Rarely do I say this. You might just want to throw the course stats model out the window, right? It's going to be so extreme because of the data that's available, because these guys are playing as teams as opposed to individuals. It's going to be really, really tough. I think we can just simply go back to basics here, play the best teams, and then also use game theory, right? So the best teams, the favorites, you're going to have the Cantlay and Xander, Rory McIlroy, Shane Lowry, the Fitzpatrick brothers, the Højgaard brothers. All of those teams are going to be very valuable teams, favorites. This is an event where some team like Robbie Shelton and Wilson Furr are going to finish inside the top five. Maybe not those guys specifically, right? But you're going to have, I'm trying to think of what a good example is. Like, it was like Sam Ryder and somebody who filled in as an alternate, like 1 minute before his tee time went deep. Justin Suh and Rico Hoey both play out of TPC Summerlin, probably know each other very well. Rico's an unbelievable driver. Justin Suh, when he's going well, putts great. Like, these guys can, they can get it going. This is a week to embrace variance, embrace game theory, not be afraid to get down into the depths of teams that you have never heard of. All of these guys can make a bunch of birdies. So I'm going to try to live at two ends of the spectrum here. Favorites on one end, game theory plays on the other, and see what the best lineups that we can make are. And then finally, last thing about this, just before we jump into the cheat sheet, you'll see the way that the website is set up. My website, rickrungood.com, is set up. You have Zurich Classic as individual, you have Zurich Classic as teams, and then you've got, you know, the other fields that are going on this week as well. You might want to tap into all of the resources on the site, right? So even going back and look at the legacy cheat sheet might be helpful. The power rankings have guys partnered up together. So that's got their averages in here for each one of the strokes gained. It's just going to be a little bit of piecing it all together this week. So if you see something weird on the website, it's, you know, like a 1 week only kind of thing because of the nature of this event. All right, let's have a little fun here. We're just going to deep dive teams and players and see what happens. So here's the cheat sheet, and it is probably zero surprise that Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele are the most expensive golfers. They should be. They're $11,200. They have played this event great in the past. They've won it together. When they don't win it, they finished basically inside the top 10. They have a lot of Ryder Cup experience. They're obviously great friends. They absolutely should be the favorites. If you can get access to as much or as little of these guys as you want, like, you should be able to get it. Like, no problem there if you just want to pile in on these guys. The McIlroy Shane Lowry team is pretty interesting. So what do we know here? We know they're great friends. We know that they have a lot of Ryder Cup experience together. We know that Shane Lowry, and I'll pull him up as well, has a couple of really good, valuable skill sets, right? He's a decent driver of the ball. He can get hot with the putter. He's got a decent little short game that probably comes in handy in alternate shot a little bit. The thing that maybe he provides that Rory doesn't is a little bit of safety. Rory's been making a lot of big numbers this year, and that's going to be okay in best ball if he goes out and makes a big number and Shane Lowry just puts a par on the scorecard or something like that, right? Having a little bit of a safety net, having a little bit of a backup plan. The problem that I have with this team is if Rory gets loose in alternate shot, that's obviously not great. There is no safety net there. And also, Shane Lowry's putting has been abysmal. Lost 7.5 strokes again at Harbortown. I was ready to give him a pass for losing seven. I did give him a pass for losing 7 strokes putting at Augusta National. That can happen. You can't lose 7.5 putting at Harbortown. And now I think there's something bigger here. So this is probably a team because of the name value, because Rory McIlroy, I don't think, has ever played this event before, or at least not as a member of a team. Probably goes more popular than they should be. And I'm wondering if that's just a nice thing to avoid at the top. Zalatoris and Sahith might be my favorite team. First off, what I need to tell you about Will Zalatoris is probably something you already know about. But he's an electric approach player. He is good off the tee. His around the green play is sharp. The putter, which he kind of fixed to start 2024, has faded away a little bit, but it's still not that bad, right? He's back to basically being the golfer that we saw for a lot of his career, really elite ball striker, and he's going to lose 1.5 strokes putting. And if he ever gains 1.5 strokes putting, he's probably going to win. Sahith very sneakily finished second last week. Obviously, Scotty steals all the oxygen. And because this finishes on a Monday morning, it's, you know, does anybody even realize that Sahith finished second? This is an unbelievable trend line for him. You know, he has been putting together a really good year, much more consistent than he has ever been. A great putter, which can counteract some of the Will Zalatoris maybe struggles, maybe frees up Zalatoris a little bit more. We've seen that at times as well, you know, being able to putt, knowing that your partner also has a putt for birdie or also has a putt for par, or half the time an alternate shot, you don't even have to putt at all. So this is a very, very intriguing team. A couple of Texas guys, a couple of guys who get along very well with everyone. I don't know what their you know, personal angle is for getting together here, but that's the team that really gets me excited. Also, Sahith, don't quote me on this. I believe he has a team win. I think he won the QBE shootout. I'll look this up. I think he won the QBE shootout, which is a smaller version of this with, I want to say Tom Hoagie. I'll look it up. Yes, indeed. Hoagie and Sahith were 34 under in a 3-round QBE shootout, which is only 12 teams. But listen, alternate shot and best, or I think this is all, I think QBE might be all best ball. They might not even do alternate shot, but that team experience, I mean, it can't be a bad thing. They beat out Charlie Hoffman, Ryan Palmer, Harris English, Matt Kuchar, Max Homa, Kevin Kisner, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So interesting little nugget there. Colin Morikawa and Kurt Kitayama. These are two guys that I don't really know the status of their game. Morikawa has been putting up good finishes despite not having his superpower, which is the approach play. Loses another 3 strokes on approach at Harbortown. Now he's lost multiple strokes on approach in 4 of his last 5. This is terrifying. I guess the argument would be, well, even without his superpower, he's still put up a pretty decent finish in a signature field event. And I would say, yeah, absolutely agree with that. But I'm not super confident in the status of his game. He gets another Vegas guy here in Kurt Kitayama. So I know these two, they know each other quite well. This will be very, very comfy. Not really sure who does the putting on this team, and not really sure where they gain a significant edge on the rest of the field if both of them are playing to what they've done in 2024. Kitayama has been better, but I still think that there's enough concern on both of these guys that I'd be willing to either go up for Zalatoris and Sahith or go down the Canadian groups, the Fitzpatrick groups, get down into that 9K range. Okay, the 9K range. So first off, Hoagie and McNealy are really interesting. We've got Hoagie, who again has partnered with Sahith and has turned into just the one of the most stunning approach players in the world. Struggled a little bit on Sunday, struggled a little bit when the heat got turned up at Harbortown, but despite that, finished T18 at a signature event and has been piling up approach gains ever since. McNealy, since he has come back from injury, looks good, looks healthy again, right? He's playing some of the better golf that we've seen from him in quite some time. He's hitting it well. He's always been a very good putter. This is a very good team. Also, if you go to the power rankings, and this is, it looks kind of weird because the salaries are summed instead of average. I'll fix that. But Hoagie and McNealy are the third best combined pair in this field over the last 35 rounds. So Xander and Schauffele number one, Lawrence and Geiter are number two. There's a lot of like Corn Ferry stuff and Euro stuff in there. And then Hoagie and McNealy have actually been a hair better than Rory and Lowry over the last 35 rounds. So that's just averaging all of their stats across the board. Additionally, they are a very well-rounded team. You know, look at how they gain in all 4 of the major strokes gain categories. It is what the Cantlay Xander team does. There are a few teams in this field that can boast that for an extended period of time for combining the two players together. So a lot of attention of mine is Hoagie McNealy this week. Wouldn't mind the Fitzpatricks. They played this together last year. They finished 19th. Alex has been, I think, probably better this year than he was entering last year. Last year, he was very much an unknown, and it felt like he was just getting a kind of a courtesy start from Matt, excuse me, a courtesy gift. Well, he's been playing much better golf. So rickrungood.com, also I've got six different tours. So I've got the European tour stuff in here, Live, I've got Korn Ferry. So like, if you're looking for those types of guys, I have all the results. So Alex has been a lot better. Since December, he's been piling up these top 20 finishes and some of the bigger events, Dubai Desert Classic, Australian PGA Championship, Magical Kenya, Singapore Classic. And then he did come over and play in Punta Cana last week and he finished T23, the event that Billy Horschel won. So we are getting, and if you go back to last year, he was not playing nearly as well or as often, because I don't think he had status anywhere last year leading into the Zurich Classic. Because the start before the Zurich, he played, was 2 months prior the Indian Open. Then it was like 4 months before that. So I don't think he had status anywhere this time last year. Now he does. So I think there was a lot of excitement for the Fitzpatricks last year. I think there should be more this time around. The two Canadian teams here, Pendrith Connors, Nick Taylor, Adam Hadwin, will get a lot of love. I prefer the Nick Taylor, Adam Hadwin group. I think they're just both better, right? I think Hadwin has shown us the ability to go low. He's very pliable in terms of being a good partner. And then Nick Taylor is having a really good year. I'll be interested to see what people do with the Højgaards, right? Most people know about Nikolai, who's played some very good golf over the last year, but Rasmus is not, you know, he's not a scrub, right? He finished second at an event, the Ras Al Khaimah Championship in January, followed up with two straight top eight finishes in Bahrain and Qatar. Hasn't played as well when he's come over on the PGA Tour, missed the cut at the Honda or the Cognizant, finished T49 in Puerto Rico. But you've got to imagine there are not going to be many more comfortable pairings and guys that you have played so much golf with and understand the game more than your twin brother. And that's what the Højgaards get here. So it's probably Fitzpatrick's, it's Hoagie and McNealy, it's the Højgaards for me. Quite honestly, a lot of this 9K range is very, very good. I don't think you could go wrong with a lot of it. The 8K range is where things start to get really interesting and you start to scratch your head on how some of these guys even got together in the first place. So a couple things I need to point out. First off, Bo Hostler is playing with Sam Ryder. Even the PGA Tour's release of the field had Bo Hostler in this field twice, one with Sam Ryder and one with Wyndham Clark. Wyndham Clark's not playing this event. So Bo Hostler is with Sam Ryder. Be careful of that just before you start scratching your head and figuring out what's going on. Billy Horschel just won last week in Punta Cana and cares about these events way too much, right? Like Billy just cares too much, okay? Which can be good and it can be bad. He has normally played with Sam Burns. So when you look at those results for Horschel, remember, okay, he was riding with Sam Burns. Now he's going to ride with Tyson Alexander. I like Tyson Alexander, but we're not getting a ton of great play and a ton of great metrics out of him. It's kind of all over the place. A handful of top, you know, 15, top 16 finishes, a handful of missed cuts. I don't know if Billy Horschel is going to be able to kind of drag the best out of him. If anybody can, it's probably Billy. Tyson's game skews better towards the short game stuff, which unfortunately is kind of what Billy Horschel does as well, especially when he's going well. You start getting the putter to heat up. You start getting the short game to heat up. I will give him credit. You know, he's been more well-rounded. He struck it well in Florida, at Cognizant and Valspar. He struck it well in Houston. And then even though we don't get the strokes game breakdown in Punta Cana, you imagine gaining 16.8 strokes and winning, he probably did everything pretty well there. So Billy's the best he has been since getting to the, leading into the Zurich Classic in quite some time, but he's now going to have a pretty significant downgrade in a partnership. So I think these guys will be fine. They'll probably make the cut. They'll probably be in the top 15, but I think that, I don't think there's a great chance that they win unless Tyson Alexander goes crazy nuts. The Euros are sneaky good at stuff like this. They tend to play more team events, especially as juniors, than the Americans do. And they are, quite honestly, they are more, like team oriented. I don't know what the word I'm looking for. Like they're just willing to give up their ego at the door which is kind of why you see the Ryder Cup be so successful week in and week out. So when I see a team of Thomas Dietrich and Robert McIntyre, I'm intrigued. Dietrich's been playing great golf. 17th at Valspar, runner-up in Houston. He did play the RBC Heritage. He gained a lot of strokes putting. It's not out of character for him. He finished T28. McIntyre has not been playing as well, but you get the Ryder Cup experience, now a chance where he does not have to be relied on wholly for every single one of his shots. And when you look at the rest of this 8K range, there's a lot more questions than there are answers. You know, I think that Keith Mitchell and Joel Damon will be popular because they're popular guys. Montgomery and Ben Griffin, I like individually, but together they're kind of the same person. You see, they crush it via putting and short game categories. I don't know how they're going to get to the putting surfaces. I think Doug Gim and Chan Kim probably get a decent bit of attention because Doug Gim's been playing much better golf in 2024. And Chan Kim, who I believe just finished inside the top, I think he shot the round of the day on Sunday at the Korn Ferry event. Let me see. Or I'm sorry, in the, not a Korn Ferry event, in the Punta Cana event. So Chan Kim has gone 14th at the Texas Open, 6th in Punta Cana. That's a team that's really interesting. And I think they'll be popular, but that's a team that I think is, would not be surprised to see them miss the cut, would not be surprised to see them in the mix. So, that's pretty interesting as well. The team that I probably like the most, and this will be so on brand for me, is Davis Thompson and Andrew Novak at $8,100. So Davis Thompson has been great from tee to green, starting to figure it out here in 2024. He's only missed a couple of cuts this year, played well in Punta Cana last week. Then you get Andrew Novak, where if you've been following along, has earned our attention. Three straight top 10s from Phoenix to Honda, missed the cut at the Players. I have no problem with that because he immediately bounced back with a T17 at Valspar. He's hitting the ball really well. He's not putting super great, but he is a good putter. These two guys are so talented. I love them individually from like a high upside standpoint. Put them together. A couple of St. Simons Islands guys, put them together and see how low they can go. That's like the Rick Rungood team right there. Those two guys at $8,100. The $7,000 range. Love Ekroat, very worried about Goddard, right? They're a team, they're at 7,900. Ekroat, what I really love about him is he was playing well, then he won, and he didn't stop playing well, right? Some of these guys, they just take a sigh of relief and then miss a couple cuts. He didn't do that. And then he played well at Harbortown last week. Goddard, I would be completely out on if it wasn't for the fact that he does have an elite skill set, which he can absolutely bomb it. Now, if he can keep it in play off the tee, he is going to give Ekroat a lot of decent looks, and maybe he's got the firepower to make enough birdies and all that stuff. But if it wasn't for that one elite skill set, I'd be really, really worried about Goddard up here. Because he has the elite skill set, because he has Ekroat with him, this team's like a 7 out of 10 for me. If Goddard couldn't drive it farther than basically anybody in this field, it'd be like probably a 5 out of 10. Also, I believe that's an Oklahoma State and an Oklahoma guy, which that feels a little bit dirty. What else do we have here? The Taylor Moore, Matt Neesmith group pairing team, whatever you want to call that, is very interesting. They've played together each of the last 2 years. They finished fourth each of the last 2 years. Taylor Moore has kind of elevated himself to a different tier of golfer than Neesmith has. And Neesmith's really been struggling, which I hate to see. But they do have that great experience together. So maybe this can be a little bit of a spark for Matt Neesmith, which I think it was last year. He was playing pretty poorly last year leading into this event as well. Yeah, he was. And then they just sparked and finished fourth. So Neesmith had missed 4 of his 6 cuts coming in and didn't have a finish inside the top, oh my God, 50 for 6 months. Then they get the spark at Zurich. So maybe we can get that again. And Taylor Moore's probably playing better golf than he's ever played leading into this. Harry Hall, Scott Piercy, a couple of Vegas guys, they probably know each other very well, but I'm not sure I love their games together. I do like the Vincent Norman, Jorge Campillo partnership. No clue how these guys got together. If you've been following along on this channel for a while, you'll know the talent that Vincent Norman has. Not only from like a advanced metric standpoint, where he is just a great driver, tends to be a better ball striker than a short game guy. I mean, his putting is miserable, but he won the Irish Open. He won an opposite field. He won Barbasol last year. He's in the middle of a little bit of a slump, a hair of a slump, still driving it well and still hitting it well at times. Jorge Campillo is like your seasoned vet, your guy who can shepherd a kid around with a ton of talent and get the best out of him. And he's been playing decent himself, right? It's not the greatest golf I've ever seen, but good enough. And in this format, there's a lot of just like, I don't know, intangibles. It's a very strange thing. And we're going to see some of these guys pop up out of nowhere. But that's one of them. I want to see what Alex Smalley's been up to, because Matty Schmidt, I'm just all in on, right? He had another good finish again last week, hits it far, putting it well with the broomstick. Let's see what Smalley's been up to. Nothing great. In fact, 7 consecutive missed cuts until last week in Punta Cana when he finished 6th. So is that enough of a nugget? Because I would really like to take Alex Smalley and Matty Schmid and say that that's enough of a nugget from Alex Smalley, is that T6 from last week. The 6K range, I think you got to be in here on Justin Sun, Rico Hoey. So Justin Sun, let's pull up his stat profile and hope that he has putted better, because he's historically one of the better putters that we have on the PGA Tour. He's been in a putting slump. Show me something. Boy, yeah, this is bad. It's really bad. I mean, this team's going to be like 1% owned. So that would be nice. But man, Justin Suh is so far removed. I know these two guys play together a lot. And I have heard Rico Hoey described by other players as like one of the best drivers they've ever seen. And he's putting together some decent results. And he's putting together some really good advanced metrics. He's now been better than Justin Suh, yet one of them has probably way higher status on the PGA Tour than the other. Both these guys play out of Summerlin. God, I wish Justin Suh was playing better. That's a team I really do like. Pearson and Parker, both of them had top 20s last week in Punta Cana, and in the same points I made about the Højgaards knowing each other's game so well. Obviously the Cooties know each other's game incredibly well. This one here is so interesting to me. Alejandro Tosti and Ted Potter Jr. Tosti was in a signature event last week and he's 6,100. So what has Ted Potter Jr. been doing? I asked that not even jokingly. Like, I have no idea what Ted Potter Jr. has been doing. Let's find out what he's been doing. Played in Puerto Rico in March. That was his last start and he missed the cut. Bermuda, yikes. I mean, he's not even getting starts anymore. He's not getting starts. When he does start, it's horrible. Man. Okay. Well, we learned why they are 6,100. What has Ryan McCormick been up to? Because anytime you can get like a increased variance situation, I'm going to be interested in Norman Jeong, who is playing with Ryan McCormick. McCormick hasn't been good either. He's played probably 8 PGA Tour events. He's missed the cut in half of them. He's got a best finish of T58 in Puerto Rico. Yikes. Okay. What else do we have here in the 6K range? Let's look at Meissner and Smotherman. They're 67. Meissner's been popping up. Where have I seen him at? T10 at the Texas Open. Okay. He did miss the cut in Puerto Rico or Punta Cana last week, but it looked like he missed it on the number. And before that, he has 3 top 25 finishes in his last 5 starts, including a 10th at the Texas Open. So that's fine. Let's see what Smotherman's been doing. Really getting some deep cuts in this. Okay. Back and forth between the Korn Ferry and the PGA. Played in Punta Cana last week, finished 50th. 9th on a Korn Ferry event 2 weeks before that. 4th in the Bahamas in Abaco. That was in January. So he hasn't played a lot this year. I'm guessing he's bouncing around with status issues. I don't hate that. Also, he's like wearing the same, our headshots are like the same right now, right? He's wearing like the same thing I am in this headshot. Let's run a model. Now, the model, obviously the model is going to be weird because this is, I mean, we could run it as teams. Let's just run it. Let's run it as individuals. I feel like that's a lot safer. All right, let's do this. We have to do a couple of things. We have to go with weighted strokes gain total for a pretty significant chunk of this, because these are guys on PGA, they're on Korn Ferry, they're on DP World Tour. We got to do the weighted strokes gain for a lot of this. So we're going to put 50 on that. Then we're going to do a lot of upside stuff. So we're going to do strokes gain distribution for 4 plus 15, strokes gain total 5 plus for 15. Then we're going to go strokes gained approach for, so we have 20 left, strokes gained approach last 36 for 10, and strokes gained putting last 24 for 10. What I've done is I've generated basically the highest upside model I could run, right? Weighted strokes gained, how often do you gain 4 strokes? How often do you gain 5? And then approach play and putting, that's the combination to get hot. Number one is Xander. Rory is 2. Sahith is 3. Fitzpatrick is 4. Cantlay is 5. So Xander and Cantlay are 1 and 5. Rory and his partner are 2 and 9. Sahith and Zalatoris are 3 and 13. Matt Fitzpatrick is 4. Alex Fitzpatrick probably is pretty far down the list here. He also might not have, did I miss him? He also might not have strokes gained metrics. He's 65th. So 4th and 65th. Morikawa is 6th, and his partner is Kitayama, who is 50th. Billy Horschel, 7th. That's pretty good, Bill. Montgomery, 8. Lowry, 9. Mitchell, 10. Hoagie, 11. So Hoagie and McNealy are 10 and 20. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. The Dementus. It's pretty good. All right. Yeah. There's a lot. There's a lot of guessing, too. I'll be the first to admit that. Some data, some guessing. It's a very strange event. I enjoy it. I'm glad they went back to adding alternate shot as the final round. Once they did that, it was much, much better. Okay. Live chat, Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern time, Rick Run Good YouTube channel. Go sign up for rickrungood.com. I'm going to do my best to always get you improvements and have it be as great as possible. Best of luck this week. I'll talk to you guys soon.